Okay, thank you. So it's a pleasure to be here and having the chance to talk about our work on virtualization assisted security. So today we will explore how virtualization techniques can enhance the security of the Linux kernel. Specifically, I will provide an overview of the BlueRock security architecture, which leverages virtualization extensions to enhance the security of the subsystems of the Linux kernel. So the problem that we are trying to solve is the following. So the Linux architecture currently faces, let's call it inherent challenges in its security design. Fundamentally, the OS distinguishes between the, less privileged user space and the highly privileged kernel space. So this design ensures that the kernel is, remains in control over user space applications. In other words, the kernel is responsible for protecting and isolating user space applications. At the same time, it is also the kernel who bears the responsibility of protecting itself from unauthorized access. And if we, for a moment, assume that the kernel has been compromised, the question arises, who could actually protect the Linux kernel from unauthorized access? And we believe that the answer lies in virtualization-assisted security. So the idea behind virtualization-assisted security is as follows. So it is about designing an architecture that alleviates the strict separation between the Linux kernel and a VMM. So we propose to empower the kernel to directly integrate virtualization extensions as inherent building blocks into their subsystem. We consider virtualization extensions as not limited to VMMs, but rather as a hardware resource whose capabilities can really greatly benefit the security of OS systems. So by equipping the Linux subsystems with security primitives provided by the VMM, the VMM evolves beyond its traditional role of basically implementing the virtual hardware interface and becomes a resilient security support layer for virtual machines. In short, through virtualization-assisted security, we aim to strengthen the Linux kernel against basically the defense of the Linux kernel against malicious actors, even in the presence of potential kernel vulnerabilities. Now, before we can dive deeper into the topic, I suggest to introduce the BlueRock security architecture. And this architecture encompasses several key components, which would also allow us to follow the presentation. The first component is the security support layer. So the architecture uses the Nova microhypervisor as its security support layer for VMs. It provides a hypercall interface to supply VMs with vast capabilities. And at the moment, it supports 64-bit Intel and ARMv8 application CPUs. So since the underlying concepts are fully hypervisor agnostic, they can be similarly applied to also other implementations such as Linux KVM. The next component of the architecture is the workload VM. So it runs an enlightened or para-virtualized Linux kernel. And combined with the underlying security support layer, this VM or this component presents the primary focus of this presentation. So this VM collaborates actively with the underlying security support layer and thus leverages vast building blocks to enhance the security of the kernel's subsystem. So depending on the system's configuration, the workload VM can also operate as the sole VM on the system and does not necessarily require any other or additional VMs to assist its security. The workload VM interacts with the underlying security support layer through hypercalls, and hypercalls are used here in this context to initialize and also to commit to a given security policy. But they're also used to verify whether specific operations are permitted within a given context. So optionally, the workload VM can generate high-level security events such as process lifecycle and container drift events, and they are then sent through a vSocket to an external monitor. So these events provide insights for an external security monitor, which can react to potential threats. Any policy violation triggers the security support layer to eject faults into the workload VM and thus basically abort an unauthorized operation. The final component of this architecture is the control plane VM. And this component is optional, and it won't be considered in the rest of the presentation. Still, for the sake of completeness, I would like to quickly introduce it. So it receives the security events which were originated or generated by the workload VM. And it allows security experts to basically define and maintain OPA-based security policies, which can be then enforced through the underlying security support layer. So this design basically decouples policy decision from policy enforcement points. Now that we have covered the overall security architecture, I would like to start talking about specific VAS primitives that our system implements. So the Linux kernel integrity primitive is one of the main primitives, and it empowers the workload VM to basically protect its kernel code in read-only sections against unauthorized modification. So even if attackers gain kernel privileges, this primitive prevents them from modifying protected code and from, for example, from injecting code into the kernel in an unauthorized way. The selective data structure and pointer protection primitive is designed to protect the integrity of sensitive or critical data structures and, well, their pointers. It binds pointers to sensitive data or off sensitive data structures to unique and immutable contexts and verifies their integrity at designated verification points. Now, the security support layer implements also further primitives, including control register, value blocking, LSM policy protection, driver signature enforcement, and many more. And all of them can be leveraged by the workload VM to support or to protect its subsystems. But since we have timing constraints, I will only cover the first primitive, which is the Linux kernel integrity protection. Now, as such, I suggest to take a closer look to at this primitive. So the VM, as I mentioned before, the workload VM leverages hypercalls to communicate with the underlying security support layer. In this context, the VM employs hypercalls to register memory regions within the security support layer. So this concept applies not only to static kernel code and data segments, but also to dynamically loadable code and data. For example, this includes kernel modules and, of course, PPF programs. So by using this VAS primitive, the VMM enhances the kernel's memory management capabilities. In fact, it combines the kernel memory management with the system's second-level address translation capabilities to grant access permissions exclusively to memory regions which have been previously registered. Now, in this way, the system becomes able to identify or intercept, for example, unauthorized supervisor execution attempts, and this way effectively to thwart, for example, injections of unknown or malicious code into the kernel. And as you can see here on the slide, in this example, we have an unauthorized execution attempt of the unknown memory region, which is marked as red. And because it was not registered beforehand, it can be intercepted and basically aborted. So all of this works because each registered memory region is categorized by memory type and associated flags. So the memory type is hypervisor and hardware independent, and it is basically internally mapped to a hardware-defined memory permission format. But the memory flags, in particular transient and mutable, describe additional properties of the associated memory region, which we should quickly look at. So first, the transient flag indicates whether a given memory region is static or dynamic. So this flag determines if a previously registered memory region can be retrospectively removed from the system. And as you can see on the slide here, the workload VM uses the integrity create hypercall to first register a transient memory region which belongs to a kernel module. Now, at the later point in time, when the kernel module gets unloaded, the workload VM can unload the VM. Can unregister the previously registered memory, to release the memory. Please note that any attempt to release non-transient memory will cause the security support layer to inject a fault into the VM. The mutable flag allows to update the type of the memory, so the permissions of the registered memory regions. And on this slide, we see again that the workload VM creates or registers a memory region which is first mutable, and it has read-write permissions. At a later point in time, the VM can use the integrity update hypercall to change the permissions of the previously registered memory region. So in this case, the type is changed, or the permissions are changed from read-write to read-only. Here again, please note that the mutable flag allows updating only to more restrictive memory types. And this means that subsequent updates cannot grant more permissions than were initially assigned to the memory region. Now, by using the presented memory model, we become able to support basic operations. So we can boot up the Linux kernel, we can load kernel modules and BPF programs. However, in reality, the kernel is, well, much more dynamic than that, and heavily relies on runtime patching to optimize performance and functionality. So this means that without explicit support for patching, the previously presented integrity primitive will raise a false positive every time the system tries to patch itself. And this is a problem. Here are some key patching facilities that are supported by the kernel. Just to provide a small overview, we have something like alternative instructions, which replace instructions with their most optimized version depending on the CPU. We have jump labels, which are used to toggle rarely used conditional code paths, again by patching kernel code. Then we have static keys, static calls, which use jump labels underneath, and we have also something like trace points, which allow to attach probes to hooks in the kernel code for tracing purposes. And while all of these patching facilities are very useful, they can present significant security risks. So attackers can abuse these patching facilities to take over control over the Linux kernel. So attackers can reuse patching-related code or even modify patching-related data structures to basically to take over the system. So this can lead to unauthorized modification of the kernel code, or even to disabling particular security events in the system. And all of that, of course, even though we have modern CVI mitigations in place. So at this point, the question arises, how or is it even possible to reliably distinguish between legitimate and malicious patching activities? Well, generally, to thwart attacks targeting the patching facility, we would need to first guarantee that the patching facility is called only from a trusted, benign context. And second, we need to maintain the integrity of the patching-related data structures. So the issue at hand is that even though we can address the first point through something like CFI, the second requirement will remain an open challenge. And because of this, we propose, again, virtualization-assisted security to meet both requirements. In this context, we introduce the Vault. The Vault is a, well, new security primitive which is designed to isolate subsystems in the Linux kernel. In a nutshell, we provide an API to encapsulate and isolate sensitive code and data in dedicated sections that belong to the Vault. So in this way, we become able to logically partition the Linux kernel and shift entire subsystems, if needed, and their associated data structures into separate Vaults. So the goal here is to really restrict the kernel from directly accessing memory within the Vault. So access to this memory should be controlled through strictly governed transition points into and out of the Vault, and any unauthorized attempt to basically access this memory should raise a violation. So by implementing the Vault, our main goal is to effectively prevent attackers from reusing protected code and from modifying sensitive data within the Vault. Now, before we continue, I suggest we quickly recap the concepts of second-level address translation. And here, typically, a VMM uses a single set of SLAT tables to translate guest physical to machine or host physical memory. So in other words, a single set of SLAT tables defines the guest's view on its physical memory. If we change the permissions of this global set of SLAT tables, which is, by the way, a very slow operation, we will inevitably affect the global view of the memory as it is perceived by all vCPUs in the system. Now, instead of using a single global view on the guest physical memory, the Nova guest spaces subsystem allows us to maintain and dynamically switch among different views. So by switching the views, we basically can efficiently change permissions without having to walk this global set of SLAT tables. And even more important, this doesn't require us to affect any other or the views of any other vCPUs. So, and all of this creates the basis that we need for implementing the Vault. So, as we also know, the hardware allows us to have only one memory view to be active at a given time. So, and at the same time, we would like to configure multiple memory views to guard disjoint memory sections that belong to a Vault. So, and these disjoint sections cannot be accessible at the same time. So what I'm trying to say is that we cannot simply associate one Vault with a given or with only one memory view. Instead, we require two views to implement one Vault. So we dedicate one view, which is the restricted kernel view, to unify all memory restrictions of the system, and this becomes the default view in the system. We use a second view to relax restrictions for a given memory region or for given memory regions that belong to a Vault. Now, to accomplish n Vaults, we would need to define n plus one memory views, and by entering a specific Vault, we basically relax the permissions of the memory region that belongs to this particular Vault, while all other views would remain in their restricted state. Now that we have established the technical concepts behind the Vault primitive, I would like to discuss how this works in practice. And the following slides are going to be a little bit fun, so please bear with me. We have integrated the Vault into the kernel to protect against attacks targeting the patching and tracing facility. So by using the Vault's API, we basically encapsulate the necessary code and data of the patching and tracing facility in designated memory sections. So additionally, we clearly define the Vault's entry and exit points and share this information during early boot with the underlying security support layer. Now, to implement the security patching primitive that is compatible with the previously introduced integrity primitive, we define the following requirements. First, we consider the code outside of the Vault as untrusted. So our goal is to really prevent a potentially compromised kernel from reusing code gadgets inside of the Vault. Second, it is important that only the code that is inside of the Vault has access to the sensitive data structures inside of the Vault. So any unauthorized access to these data structures from the outside of the Vault shall be blocked. And third, and this applies to this example with patching, the code within the Vault should not be able to directly patch the Linux kernel itself. Instead, it should instruct the security support layer through hypercalls to patch the respective code regions on behalf of the subsystems. So these patching requests are considered trusted because they originate from a secure, trusted, or verified location in the Vault, and they hold data that is also Vault protected. Now, to isolate the subsystem in the Vault, we integrate or leverage Nova guest spaces, and specifically we create two additional views on the guest physical memory. So the first view is the kernel view, as we discussed before. It restricts access to code and data inside of the Vault, while at the same time it of course allows access to the remaining parts of the kernel. The second is the Vault view. It grants access permissions to the memory within the Vault. So basically, yes. And to show how it works in practice, we look at the following slides. So like we said before, during early boot, the kernel communicates designated entry points into the Vault with the underlying security support layer. So these entry points define the Vault's interface, and they comprise addresses of selected function entries inside of the Vault. This means only branches to these specific entry points are authorized to enter the Vault. So when the kernel jumps to one of these entry points, the system will trap the execution attempt and hand over control flow to the underlying security support layer. Then the security support layer compares the trapped address against the set of authorized entry points, and only if the check passes, the VMM switches to the Vault view, allowing the kernel's execution to proceed from inside of the Vault. If there is a need to temporarily exit the Vault, for example, to call a function, an external function that is not part of the vault or due to an interrupt, the underlying security support layer switches back to the kernel view, and this way the system basically temporarily closes the vault and maintains its integrity. As soon as the interrupt handler finishes its execution, the system can re-enter the vault. And for this, the VMM must verify that the vault was opened legitimately in the first place. And second, the return address must match the location of the initially exited, the address must match the location that initially exited the vault. And well, finally, as soon as the execution reaches its designated exit point, the VMM closes the vault, and this completes the life cycle of the vault. Now, as we saw, the vault lends itself perfectly to reinforce something like the patching and tracing facility and their data structures. But what about K-probes? And I have explicitly not mentioned K-probes in my list before, and the reason for this is that I believe K-probes deserve a special issue. So K-probes combined with BPF programs serve as a foundation for advanced tracing and security frameworks. However, their extensive flexibility presents a double-edged sword. So K-probes allow to place hooks at almost any locations in the kernel. And this poses significant challenges when we try to authenticate the patching attempts. Now, overall, K-probes presents a great tool for debugging, profiling, generating security events more, but they can become a dangerous tool in the wrong hands. Because of this, my question to the community is, how do you believe could VAS reduce the attack surface of K-probes? And I'm sure there's a number of scenarios in which, for example, the vault technology could assist the current security state of K-probes. However, as I said, we have yet to pinpoint a definite solution with this regard. So if you have suggestions or would like to discuss topics, please feel free to reach out. We are, let's collaborate and basically talk about your ideas. So at this point, I would like to conclude this presentation with an outlook and also a call for action. So in summary, I can say that there is still a lot left to investigate. We at BlueRock Security will continue investigating techniques that allow us to further alleviate the strict separation between the Linux kernel and a VMM. We truly believe that virtualization extensions can become inherent building blocks of the Linux kernel. At the same time, we would like to engage with the Linux community. So BlueRock's VAS Linux kernel as well as the Nova Microvisor are both open source. And one of our next goals is to start preparing patches to get at least a part of our code base into mainline. Also, from what I can tell, virtualization-assisted security receives increasing attention from the industry. So software companies like Microsoft, Samsung, Huawei, and of course more, seem to put a strong emphasis on virtualization-assisted security. So we are open to start discussions in order to define a common hypervisor-agnostic hypercall interface for Linux that would meet the requirements for all parties. Now, at the end of this presentation, I still claim that virtualization-assisted security has not been explored to its full extent, and because of this, I look forward to further research, basically investigating new avenues of virtualization that are yet to be discovered. This concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
All right, I was slightly short on time for questions, but I'm sure you can go outside and yeah. Anyone who's got questions about it can come meet you very easily.
Thank you. Perfect.